started building relationships with commercial brokers. There's guys out there and women that have had decades of experience in leasing. It's one number one most important thing is leasing in commercial. So just getting a pulse on the market, you're going to need to build relationships with commercial brokers anyways, if you're going to get into that field. Standard, you know, commercial property and also even mid to large multifamily.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Matt is a partner at Oak Grove Development, a real estate investment and development firm with a special focus on value-add commercial and residential properties in Rochester, New York. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, man, pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes to the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
So where I started was as a four-family owner-occupant property. I was getting kicked out of my dad's house, so I had to find a place to live. And I was a real estate broker at the time. That's where I got my start. I got bit by the bug with that when I had, you know, closed in that property. I had like $1,800 in rent checks 2 weeks later. So that's when I got bit by the bug. And I started scaling from there, buying more smaller multifamilies. And then I had my aha moment when I bought my first commercial property back about 4 years ago.
Interesting. Tell me about that aha moment. And what did you buy?
Well, my parents were like struggling financially my entire childhood. And the one thing that I see, or the two things I see that like Americans, like that stress them out the most in terms of financial milestones is one, how they're going to pay for their kids' education. Right. And two, how am I going to retire? Right. And so I bought a commercial property. It was a commercial office building, really great location. And that one deal basically paid for my girl's college education. So like, that's one deal. And I was like, damn, it's like, can I find one to fund my wife's retirement? And so I did that. And I was like, man, this deal was easier to close than four family property that I would buy. So that's really when I started, you know, getting interest in scaling to larger deals.
Gotcha. That's really intriguing. Yeah. One deal and you go, hang on. That's it. That's all it was one. And I can do that many more times. Yeah. It's a very empowering feeling. That's really intriguing. So what was the asset class that was in again?
That was office. Okay. Yeah. It was a B class office, historic building. You know, one of the things, if you look at our portfolio, it's a lot of like pretty old historic looking buildings. I have a passion for historic preservation. So that's kind of what we buy. Not the smartest thing to buy from a financial standpoint, I don't think, but yeah, we do commercial, we have multifamily residential, and then we also have some retail. We do a lot of artist studios as well. We have a really, really strong arts and cultural scene in our city. So yeah.
Got it, man. That's really, really intriguing. How did you pick that niche? And then how did you educate yourself on it?
Well, with my start in residential, I thought in order to scale that I needed to, you know, start learning to how to manage larger asset classes. So I got a job with, you know, pretty large property management company. And that's how I got the experience sort of secondhand, you know, not being the actual owner, but managing the property. So that's how I got exposed to that niche. And it was something that always scared me because I was like, I've heard, you know, a commercial space goes vacant. It's going to be vacant for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. And I'm going to, you know, have to declare bankruptcy and so on and so forth. But it definitely established a comfort level with that. And that, you know, knowing if you purchase a property in a great location, that you'll have no problem finding tenants. It may take you a little bit longer, maybe 3 months, maybe 4 months, but you know, you got very, very little turnover with commercial tenants because they're very sticky. So whereas you're buying in a residential area, you got people that turn, you know, they basically, you know, buy a house, they move out. So you're turning over tenants every 2 to 3 years, especially in the markets that we serve. So, and turnover is a number one expense driver that we witness in multifamily.
Well, for sure. Yeah. Your vacancy is one of your biggest numbers you plug in when you're doing underwriting. You're like, okay, how much vacancy we have? That's really intriguing. How is that asset class on the, you know, B class historic office buildings? How has that fared in the last couple of years?
It's actually fared quite better than anticipated. I mean, when COVID hit, we were like, oh my God, office is dead. And it has changed significantly. However, the buildings that we own where we have office product is primarily, it's smaller office. Think of like, you know, single office suites, executive suites that may be like 200 square feet. We have, you know, two offices with a little reception area. for, you know, we have a lot of therapists that are tenants of ours and stuff like that. So we had to work out some payment arrangements with like a couple salons that we had as tenants in our retail mix. You know, by the time that we negotiated those for rent forbearance agreements, you know, they got, you know, COVID relief and were able to, you know, get current. So thankfully we've been blessed in that matter.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really, really intriguing. What are some steps? If somebody wanted to follow in your footsteps and they said, hey, Matt, I want to go out and I want to do B-class office buildings, historic preservation stuff, where would you tell them to start?
I'd tell them to start at building relationships with commercial brokers. I mean, there's guys out there and women that have had decades of experience in leasing. Number one most important thing is leasing in commercial. Mm-hmm. So just getting a pulse on the market, you're going to need to build relationships with commercial brokers anyways, if you're going to get into that field. Standard, you know, commercial property and also even mid to large multifamily, it's not stuff that's listed in the MLS or multiple listing service. It's listed for the most part privately. You know, brokers will not put their stuff out on LoopNet first. Typically, they'll, you know, go to their A, B, and C list first before it hits LoopNet. So those relationships are going to be important. And our community, at least, our brokerage community is like very, very abundance mindset oriented with a lot of brokers I work with. So they're more than happy to consult with somebody one-on-one. So.
Right. Yeah, that's really, really intriguing. I love that. And so you said one of the things you said to look out for is the leasing side of it. How'd you educate yourself on what makes a good tenant, or do you just put that off onto the broker?
So I have my real estate license. I'm a real estate broker. So I do predominantly most of our company's leasing. Mm. I think it's definitely a few different parts to that. The reason why leasing is the most important is the development company is to work for. Yeah, we would have properties that were just vacant for months and months and months. And I was like, why is this vacant? And the reason why it was is because there's nobody putting the effort behind leasing it.
Right.
You know, leasing is a full contact sport. It requires, you know, it's not like an apartment. A lot of times it's just a commodity. You put it up on Craigslist, apartments.com, Zillow, Trulia, and you got, you know, 10, 15 people that want to see the apartment that week and you get a lease out of it. With commercial, you got to pick up the phone, you got to call, you know, you got to build, you know, you got to work your relationships. So it's definitely a full contact sport. And that's really, you know, you got to be very, very involved. And that's a lot what we do in terms of our marketing efforts is that building relationships, not only with my own tenants, but with also prospective tenants. And in terms of if I got an office building, I'm out there basically getting to know business owners, you know, finding what their space needs are, finding what their long-term growth plans are, because their lease is going to be up at some point in time and their current space might not fit them well. So that's what we do.
Right. That's really interesting that you say that it is a full contact sport. What are some things someone could do if they didn't want to take on the leasing role in-house?
Finding the right broker that services that type of product that you're looking to lease. So you don't want to hire a residential real estate agent or the residential real estate agent you use to buy your house to list an office or retail space for you. You may have a relationship with them, but they don't have the relationships out in that particular community in order to yield the best results for you. Also on the commercial end of things, I mean, there's brokers that I know with CB Richard Ellis that they specialize in industrial properties. There's a guy that specializes in just retail. So you want to be matched up with that one. And also you want them to be matched up with the right size as well. So if you got a broker that's, you know, specializes in, you know, leasing 20,000 square foot spaces and working on really big deals, that 200 square foot office that's in your building is not going to be a very high priority. So you want to make sure that you're matching up with the right product with the right broker as well.
Gotcha. What are some things you guys are doing in leases right now? I know inflation's a big topic. What are some things you guys are doing to kind of protect yourself from the inflationary environment we're in?
So we have a couple different tenant classes. We have our larger commercial tenants, right? Those ones are more used to expense escalators, sharing in expense increases. You know, we have some properties where we have operating expense escalators in there so that if operating expenses go up, then the tenant has to share in that expense on a pro rata basis, how much square footage they occupy. Your mom and pops that are leasing a singular office, you start putting in lease language on tax escalators and insurance escalators and this, that, and the other thing, you're going to scare them the hell away.
Right.
So with that one, you just want to make sure you're building in, you know, automatic rent increases throughout your lease term. Typically, those tenants are not going to be signing a 10-year deal with them.
Right.
You know, you may be signing like a 2 to 3 year deal. So if inflation gets out of control, if your real estate taxes go way up, you know, the lease renewal is coming up soon. You can negotiate that rent increase to make yourself whole on the back end. And, you know, you may be behind a little bit for a year or two, but a year is not a long time, I've learned. So
that's really, really intriguing. What are some other things you've done on the leasing side that have changed over the years where you say, hey, I used to do it this way and I learned a lesson the hard way and now I do it this way?
Taking my time with prospects, you know, especially if you've had a, you know, I've had some restaurant spaces that have been vacant for, 6 months to a year in our mix. And the phone's not ringing off the hook for those spaces, right? So, you know, the moment you get somebody that wants the space, you want to make sure that, all right, you're kind of getting married to this person, especially if you're doing some tenant improvements or if you're signing a long-term lease with them. Don't jump at the first opportunity that comes to you. And I found that, you know, when I've been at my most desperate moment as to like, who is going to take this space after I've passed, you know, passed over three or four, I get my like golden tenant prospect that comes in. So you just got to be, you just got to be patient on the leasing end thing there and not get too antsy.
Right, man. Yeah. I'm sure you have plenty of times where you've taken the wrong tenant and go, oh, slow down this.
Absolutely.
That's really intriguing. What are you guys looking to buy right now? And then if you don't mind sharing why.
So what we're looking to buy right now is properties that are in Rochester, New York. I mean, that's really where we have a really deep, rich understanding of our markets. Like I said, we like to buy, you know, some properties that have historic value to it that look really pretty, like that, you know, we have so many properties that have such rich history in our region. Mm. And then in terms of product, I mean, definitely we're a little bit hesitant on retail right now. We don't know where that's heading. On a smaller office, I mean, we're all in on smaller office. We are looking at industrial properties as well, warehouse properties. We don't see that going away anytime soon. But we're also looking at, you know, we've looked at some multifamily deals, but, you know, definitely looking to be more on the B to A class type properties there. You know, working class, lower income tenants got hit especially hard with COVID. And also the laws changed significantly in New York State, comes to landlord versus tenant rights in terms of collecting rent. So certainly if, you know, if we're providing a product or service, we want our customers to, you know, to pay and be able to, you know, hold them accountable for not paying. So right.
That's absolutely intriguing. Matt, thanks for taking the time today to break down kind of where you guys started, how you got there, and then it's really some nuances on the leasing side of things. That was a fun part of this conversation I didn't actually expect to get into. I learned a lot myself. So thanks for breaking that down for us. Let's jump here into the final two questions. First one is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what is one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
What we do is we believe in financial empowerment. So what we do is we fund scholarships for financial literacy and financial empowerment programs for our young people. I mean, we believe our young people, especially with our underserved population, are, you know, greatest investment. So we partner with some nonprofit and also for-profit organizations that offer those coaching programs to those young people.
That's cool. I love that. Matt, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Definitely go to our website. If you are on the fence about getting into larger scale commercial real estate, I have a how-to guide along with documenting my experiences through that and sort of an a step-by-step process in terms of how to get in that vein. So if you subscribe to our newsletter, I'll shoot that over to you. It's a little ebook. So if you go to www.oakgrovecompanies.com, that's OAKGROVE companies.com. And I'd be happy to send that over to you, try to add some value and help you not be scared. So
that's fantastic. Matt, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.